The early 1930s were the bleakest of times for the papermaking industry. When the Beloit Ironworks received the Blandin order for the number 3 machine, the Wisconsin firm had built about 600 Fourdrinieres during more than a half century of operation. But as we have seen, the Blandin order was the only one for a papermaking machine received by the Beloit Ironworks from anywhere in North America in 1931. Once the 65-car train, transporting the number 3 machine to Grand Rapids had departed from Beloit, there was no demand for other machines that year. And as we have seen, the Blandin order was also the sole North American order placed for a Fourdrinier with any company on the continent that year. During the industry expansion between 1919 and 1929, 105 new Fourdrinieres had been erected in North America. In 1930, there were 9. In 1931, only the one in Grand Rapids. In 1932, one in Newfoundland. And from 1934 to 37, none at all. The effects of earlier overproduction and of the Depression were as devastating to the companies that engineered and built the sophisticated machines as to the papermaking industry itself. No segment of papermaking production was hit harder in the early 30s than the manufacture of newsprint. Powerful publishers continued to pressure Congress and newsprint producers to keep prices low. The newsprint manufacturers suffered from ruthless competition and from overproduction, much of that from Canada, resulting in more paper than the market could possibly absorb. And the overall effects of the Depression led to less demand for newsprint. The nation's newspapers were drastically reduced in the amount of advertising that was done, and thus the papers were smaller and needed less newsprint. And sales of the commodity fell by almost half in those years of the early 1930s. And prices declined. In 1920, the contract price for a ton of newsprint was $112. In 1932, the price was $48. And in 1933, it fell to $41. And after that, in the next years, the price held at bankruptcy level, $40 per ton, while the average cost of producing that newsprint was $43. So for every ton that was sold, the newsprint companies lost money, and the more they sold, the more they lost. In the later 1920s, about 9% of the nation's newsprint was manufactured in Minnesota. The largest producer was the huge Minnesota and Ontario Paper Company in International Falls. Owner Edward Backus had borrowed and invested heavily in expanding the great company during the 1920s, increasing its capacity greatly. When newsprint prices declined, operating figures began slipping into the red. Creditors demanded payment, and in a short period of time, the corporation was in serious trouble. A board of receivers took control of the Minnesota and Ontario. A few months later, Backus was forced to withdraw completely from the company. Even as Charles Blandin was expanding his mill in Grand Rapids, his chief Minnesota rival was losing both his investment and his control of the company, of which he had been so proud. Despite all efforts by Backus to regain his position, the Minnesota and Ontario continued operation for 10 years under the control of managers appointed by the receivers. Then in 1941, the company was reorganized, and all the new corporation stock was distributed to creditors. So Backus never did manage to make a return to his company. Other Minnesota mills were certainly facing their difficulties. Many of them were cutting back production, cutting back the number of employees, and cutting back on number of hours. One of them even closed for a couple of years, hoping they could start up again under better circumstances. Well, amidst all this in Grand Rapids, a financial forecast was carefully prepared at the Blandin Paper Company for the newly expanded mill. And that was proceeding on the theory that it may take well in excess of a year before the tide of business would turn. And that, of course, was far off base. The Depression obviously has a long, long ways to go. But remarkably, the Blandin Paper Company had made a profit of $52,000 during the first quarter of 1932. And it was that figure that was used for calculating the forecast. The analysis predicted that earnings would cover payments to reduce debt and even provide some profits while keeping the company open and running and employment at its full numbers. The prognosis was not particularly optimistic for a company that had just considerably increased its productivity, certainly. And furthermore, nationwide economic recovery was by no means just a year or so away. In reality, even the moderate prediction for some profits was overly optimistic. However, the paper company's relatively small debt was important, and that was backed by resources obtained through the sale of the St. Paul newspapers. Blandin had avoided the heavy indebtedness that had led to the downfall of the Minnesota and Ontario and of so many other newsprint manufacturers. And in any event, just to maintain full employment and production during those difficult years seemed success enough, and certainly it was better than bankruptcy. Well, for Charles Blandin, always the intrepid Charles Blandin, he never avoided a challenge, no matter its magnitude or the likelihood of success. And late in 1931, he set forth a plan to bring about no less than an end to the Great Depression. In Blandin's view, the large surplus of goods accumulated in the United States was a major cause of the continuing depressed economic conditions. In brief, his plan required raising $1 billion through a well-publicized subscription drive. The money would be used to purchase surplus agricultural and industrial commodities, and under Red Cross supervision, the goods would be shipped abroad and distributed worldwide to needy persons. Once the United States surplus was depleted, agriculture and industry would revive as the demands for goods began, and the unemployment problem would be solved as well. Well, pretty ambitious project. Blandin wanted President Herbert Hoover to appoint a nonpartisan commission to direct the appeal for the $1 billion. Blandin believed that this large amount of money could be raised in a comparatively short time. Well, that's an awful lot of money to raise on that basis, certainly. In Grand Rapids, the Herald Review, needless to say, endorsed Blandin's plan, and publisher Lawrence Rossman sent marked copies of the issue explaining the idea to other editors. We can get an idea of Blandin's reception as we look at some of those Minnesota papers. The Duluth Herald found merit in the simplicity of the plan, calling the idea striking. Coleraine's Itasca Iron News regarded the idea with favor and described it as inspired. Other newspapers were neutral or skeptical. The Long Prairie Leader called the proposal more generous than practical, but thought it was all right if it could be carried out. The Canby News simply wondered, can this be done? Other papers were critical. The Fairfield Standard expressed a point of view in keeping with Blandin's own usual philosophy, saying that charity on such a large scale would be demoralizing and would create greed for more handouts rather than goodwill towards the United States. The Standard concluded, with all due respect to C.K. Blandin, whom we know as an able and competent businessman, we cannot agree with him on this matter. Several editors believe that if such a large sum of money were to be raised, the benefit should be distributed at home to help those who were unemployed. Another editor thought there was no need to buy the surplus. Why not simply send the goods overseas and give them away? The Mille Lacs Messenger saw no wisdom of any kind in the plan and wondered what would keep the problem from repeating itself once the surplus had been given away. The newspaper labeled Blandin's concept a panhandling project. Blandin's lack of support from organized labor was underlined by a St. Paul labor newspaper's scathing indictment of his plan. in an editorial titled The Wisdom of Babes. The union advocate called it stark stupidity, crude and superficial, shallow, pointing out that he had offered no permanent solution and that only a continuous sacrifice of goods at the expense of American labor could make it work. The paper said that giving control of the means of production to the people themselves was the only permanent remedy for the nation's economic ills. Well, many of those contemporary criticisms were valid, and whatever possibilities the plan may have held, it was based on an amount of money far too small to have had the needed impact. The United States did not achieve economic recovery until World War II, when tens of billions of dollars expended on the war effort finally sparked U.S. industry and agriculture to recovery. In any case, after the initial reaction, no more was heard of Blandin's imaginative proposal. Well, he wasn't done with big plans to operate on a national scale, though, and next time we'll see another of his ideas.